The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Washington Post and the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, it's time for a road trip. Taking a mid-Atlantic road trip, stop at these native plant gardens along the way, is an article that first appeared as a special in the March 10th, 2022 issue of the Washington Post. It was written by Amy Breckhout or White. It also appeared in the March 11th weekend online edition of the News and Observer. So let's see what Amy has learned. Last October, as I approached the two-acre meadow at the Delaware Botanic Gardens, I had to grin at the improbable cotton candy clouds of pink mullet grass. I'm still amazed that this airy pastel plant is native to mid-Atlantic. In 2020, I had planted some mullet grass along my front sidewalk, not really knowing what to expect. The meadow's grass was probably planted a year or so ahead of mine, which means I can anticipate similar pink clouds wafting above my yard this autumn. That's one of the reasons I love to tour gardens across the mid-Atlantic. They help me to reimagine my little pocket of our ecosystem. Like many across the region who are turning to native plants and trees, I'm trying to boost my environment by choosing species that support pollinators and birds instead of annuals and shrubs that were introduced from other habitats. That motivation fires me up, and my desire for sensory inspiration leads me to explore our regional gardens, many of which feature native varieties. As we resume road trips across the mid-Atlantic, it's easy to plan a refreshing, informative stop or two at these eight lush regional gardens. First off, we have the Delaware Botanic Gardens. This garden features simple multiple habitats, including a sunny meadow, shady woodland, and blooming rain garden that filters the runoff from its parking lot. No effort toward incorporating native plants is too small to be impactful, says Horticulture Director Stephen Price Lee. If you encourage your neighborhood and your friends and family to do the same thing, we can create a patchwork of native gardens across North America, which will be incredibly rewarding, he said. Unlike many other regional gardens, this one didn't originate with a land donation from a wealthy patron. Instead, a group of visionary volunteers decided that southern Delaware needed a horticultural education center with a native plant focus and started putting the pieces together. The rural site is a perfect stop on the way to the Delaware beaches. Renowned landscape designer Pete Olof, or Oldoff, who also designed the gardens of New York City's High Line, accepted the group's call to design the meadow using mostly native plants. Last November, with Aldoff's guidance, this garden added a whopping 84,000 spring-blooming bulbs, which will explode into a profusion of color this spring, along with providing some early-season nectar and pollen for the beneficial insects emerging from winter. Next, we have the Patterson Park Audubon Center. The National Audubon Society has become a major advocate for native plant gardening. In Baltimore, the local chapter uses the 155 acres of Patterson Park, which includes two native gardens, a lake, and playing fields, as an outdoor classroom. More than 200 bird species have been spotted in the park. It's really the insects that are the critical link between plants and birds and the rest of the food web, says Aaron Reed Miller, the center's senior coordinator for bird-friendly communities. And native plants are the only way we're going to have insects. The center offers both in-person and online courses on native gardening to support birds, along with monthly birding tours in Patterson Park and Druid Hill Park, which is home to the Maryland Zoo. Then we have the Waterfront Walks, native plant gardens. Visitors to Baltimore's Inner Harbor will find many of its signature attractions dotted with native plant gardens. One of the largest starts at Rashfield Park, and the vegetation winds past the Maryland Science Center or to the National Aquarium. Following that path, you'll pass through play areas in Pierce's Park and arrive at the Butterfly Way Station at Lancaster Street. You'll see pollinator gardens and patches tucked into smaller areas, a shady golden ragwort forest, a stream and floating wetlands that help to support fish and crabs. Nearby, you can grab lunch or dinner, then picnic while you watch turtles basking in the sun. The gardens both lure and nourish pollinators while their roots filter water for a healthier harbor. Liana Wetmore, manager of neighborhood programs for the city's waterfront partnership, encourages visitors to focus on the beautiful colors and textures of plants, such as the native iris and wild indigo, rather than just expecting showy blooms. No plant blooms all the time, she says. Then we have the Mount Cuba Center, just off Interstate 95 near the Pennsylvania-Delaware border. Mount Cuba Center isn't far from Winterthur Museum, Garden and Library, and the expansive Longwood Gardens. All are stunningly beautiful and bloom-filled, but each has a different focus. Mount Cubas is managing its more than 1,000 acres sustainably, supporting scientific research and educating the public about native plants. The gardens near the Colonial Revival-style main house are formal and symmetrical. As those plants age, the center replaces them mainly with natives in keeping with its philosophy. Dorothy Leventry, the center's director of education, hopes visitors will be inspired to try native gardening at home. Don't get analysis paralysis, she says. Get a plant in the ground as the first step. Leventry recommends planting golden Alexander and swamp milkweed for the instant gratification of watching the caterpillars they attract. Then we have the Atkins Arboretum, located 25 miles east of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. This 400-acre native garden and arboretum is an easy detour as you head into the eastern shores of Maryland and Virginia and toward many Delmarva beaches. Its buzzing pollinator, rain, and children's teaching gardens, along with 5 miles of paths, focus on how to sustain the health of the Chesapeake area and highlight plants native to the mid-Atlantic coastal plain. The trails wind through native forest, meadows, and a wetland. Stop by the visitor center to find out what's blooming and pick up one of the two audio tours. The first includes 35 stops, of which you'll hear about plant communities and ecology. The second, Nature's Role in the Flight to Freedom, explores the connection between the natural landscape and the Underground Railroad. The Arboretum offers naturalist-led tours on the first Saturday of the month, along with monthly themed tours. State Arboretum of Virginia at Blandy Experimental Farm. If you're heading into Virginia's countryside or mountains, this facility, which is part of the University of Virginia, will provide a welcome transition with more than 700 acres to explore. While the environmental challenges we face can feel overwhelming, says Carrie Whitaker, assistant curator of the Herbaceous Gardens, gardening with native plants for pollinators and wildlife is an actual contribution to our environment that anybody can do. In the pollination garden, Whitaker showcases plants you can find at your local garden center, including native sunflowers, asters, and goldenrods. Blandy's gardens also model and recommend planting both nectar and host plants to support the developmental stages of pollinators. Seeing such eco-friendly and enticing gardens in wooded areas can help us reevaluate our preconceptions about what makes an outdoor space attractive, Whitaker says. If we relax our expectations a little and make them more about what's happening in the landscape, what animals are using your garden, what insects, that can go a long way with not being so overly concerned with the perfect manicured lawn and garden, she says. It's okay if you have plants that are eaten by caterpillars. That's the goal. Then we have the Lewis Getter Botanical Garden. Just north of Richmond, those 50 acres of gardens can be welcome respite after battling traffic. Several of the garden's latest projects concentrate on refurbishing designated areas with native plants. The new strip of native flowers and grasses that lines part of Lake Sidnor near the children's garden includes phlox, swamp milkweed, rattlesnake master, asters, and other plants to support pollinators and helps address drainage issues and filters the water. The garden followed the recommended practice of not cutting back the fall garden, but leaving it until spring as a winter habitat for wildlife and insects. The site's summer theme is pollinator power, and an abundance of nectar and host plants for pollinators have been planted. Its popular Butterflies Live exhibit which closed during the pandemic, will reopen April 16th and run through October 10th of this year. Then we have the Jenkins Arboretum and Gardens, northwest of Philadelphia. You can find respite and inspiration in this 48-acre space that focuses on education and conservation. Its paths meander through multiple habitat settings, including valley, stream, and pond. The gardens are home to an important collection of plants in the Heath family, including native and non-native rhododendrons and azaleas, along with blueberries, mountain laurel, and others, some of which are rare. Visitors can look online to find what blooms to look for. A garden shop offers more than 300 kinds of plants, including native azaleas, houseplants, and perennials. So if you're interested in going to some of these Mid-Atlantic Garden sites as you travel, here's some if-you-go tips. Atkins Arboretum is found at 12610 Evelyn Road in Ridgely, Maryland, and you can go online and check them out at atkinsarboretum.org, A-D-K-I-N-S, atkinsarboretum.org. This 400-acre preserve features plants native to the Chesapeake region and includes 5 miles of trails through meadows, forest, and bottomland. Guided walks, classes, and seasonal native plant sales are offered. Visitor Center opens Tuesday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and on Sunday, noon to 4, it is closed on Mondays. Then we have the State Arboretum of Virginia at Blandy Experimental Farm. You'll find this at 400 Blandy Farm Lane, Boyce, Virginia. Check it online at blandy.virginia.edu. That's Blandy, B-L-A-N-D-Y, blandy.virginia.edu. The 712-acre farm and arboretum are the University of Virginia research facilities that offer guided walks and classes, a pollination garden, and a half-mile native plant trail. Then we have the Delaware Botanic Gardens at Pepper Creek. That's 30,220 Piney Neck Road, Dagsboro, Delaware. Online, it's DelawareGardens.org. That's DelawareGardens.org. Featuring a mainly native 2-acre meadow, this 37-acre site includes a rain garden, a shoreline refurbished with native plants, and an oak grove and woodland gardens. Then we have the Jenkins Arboretum and Gardens. That's at 631 Berwyn Baptist Road in Devon, Pennsylvania. JenkinsArboretum.org is where to look for this online. That's JenkinsArboretum.org. This 46-acre space features native plants, walking trails, and a wildflower garden. Grounds open daily, but hours vary seasonally, so you should check the website for more details. Then we have the Lewis Ginter Botanical Garden. Ginter is G-I-N-T-E-R. That's at 1800 Lakeside Avenue in Richmond, and lewisginter.org is where you find more information online. Lewis Ginter, again, that's LewisGinter.org. This 50-acre garden includes a classic conservatory, a children's garden, a farm garden, and a treehouse, along with a cafe and teahouse. Courses offered on-site and online. Then there's the Mount Cuba Center, and Cuba is just like you see in the nation Cuba, C-U-B-A. 3120 Barley Mill Road is the address in Hockessin, Delaware. That's H-O-C-K-E-S-S-I-N, Hockessin, Delaware. And you can check it out at the MountCubaCenter.org. And Mount is abbreviated MTCubaCenter.org. This more than 1,000-acre site and research facility features walking paths through native gardens and more than 2 miles of trails, including a pollinator loop and wildflower loop. Courses, self-guided walks, and group tours are available. Then we have the Patterson Park Audubon Center at 27 South Patterson Park Avenue in Baltimore. Patterson.audubon.org is where you get more information online. That's Patterson.audubon.org. Patterson Park, which provides an outdoor classroom for the center, includes a wetland garden and a sun garden. It offers bird-friendly gardening workshops and birding tours, open daily year-round. Activities are free, but may require some registration, so you may need to check that out before you go. So there you are. Wow, lots of fun in the Mid-Atlantic zone when it comes to nature. Well, next we're going to head west to learn why the Bourbon Trail is Kentucky's trifecta of tasting possibilities. Completely different track here. This article appeared in the January 23, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. It's written by Patty Nickel of the Tribune News Service. Come find bourbon. That's a quote, by the way. While that phrase lacks the gravitas of the British are coming or remember the Alamo, it's impactful enough to lure armies of tourists to Kentucky. Last year, more than 1 million visitors blazed Kentucky's Bourbon Trail, a distance north to south of 130 miles. Taking advantage of this, three enterprising tourism directors joined forces to connect their cities based on the twin pleasures of bourbon and food. The brainchild of Julie Kirkpatrick, president and CEO of Northern Kentucky Tourism, the idea of a trifecta was embraced by tourism officials in Frankfort and Bardstown. The result? A campaign encouraging all to come find bourbon. I knew I wanted to take what we have done here in Covington with the Beeline, that's the northern terminus of the Bourbon Trail, and connect it to Bardstown, the bourbon capital of the world, said Kirkpatrick. Getting Frankfort, the home of Buffalo Trace, with its rich 200-year history to join us was a bonus. I became one of the first come find bourbon trailblazers on a recent 3-day trip beginning in Covington and ending in Bardstown. I spent a day and a half eating and drinking my way through each city, but you should feel free to linger as long as you want. You won't be sorry. Covington offered three unique bourbon-tasting experiences. In New Riff Distillery's beautifully appointed tasting room with its brick walls, floor-to-ceiling windows, and ornate chandeliers, I experienced their barrel-proof tasting. The tasting features five products, one of which is a bourbon straight from the barrel rather than poured from a bottle. In bourbon parlance, this is the equivalent of doing away with the middleman, in this case, the bottle. It's a practice highly prized among bourbon aficionados. The barrel-proof tasting, which also includes a tour of the warehouse and bottling plant and costs $25, is offered only several times a month, so it is essential to book in advance. In complete contrast to the elegance of the New Riff is the quirky, and yes, that capital Q was intentional, Second Sight Distillery. A large Egyptian eye beckons you to the distillery, which at first glance could be mistaken for a replica, but it is, in fact, the real thing. The stainless steel pot was bought off a Craigslist, the crystal ball condenser came from a dismantled streetlight, and the double boiler came from the company that manufactures timpani drums. This might seem like an unconventional way to run a distillery, but partners Karis Wagoner and Rick Couch are anything but conventional. The men, both native Kentuckians, worked with Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas before returning home and opening Second Sight. At the bar, where you can sample the fruits of their labor, rums, moonshine, and the first legal bourbon in Kenton County since Prohibition. The entertainment continues in the form of seances and burlesque shows. It's safe to say there's not another distillery in Kentucky like Second Sight. Your opportunities for tasting and coveting don't stop at the distilleries. Be sure to pop in at Revival Vintage Spirits, where you can sample bourbons older than either of the owners, 39-year-old Brad Bonds and 23-year-old Anthony Blay. Specializing in vintages that date to the 1980s and earlier, you can walk in and try bourbons from their shelves, $5 to $10 shelf, the $15 to $25 shelf, and the Platinum shelf at $35. Bourbon and food are a natural pairing, and the Northern Kentucky area is becoming quite a mecca for good restaurants. Two of the best are Libby's Southern Comfort and Bouquet. At the former housed in what was once a grocery store, Southern food like your grandma made reign supreme. I don't recall my grandma making deviled eggs with pork belly lardons and chives or Geta hush puppies served with remoulade sauce and citrus honey cream, but I'm glad that at Libby's someone's grandma did, and they are both appetizer choices. As an entree, try Chef Sean's pan-seared skin-on-boneless chicken thighs with caramelized almonds and sawmill gravy served over andouille hash. At Bouquet in the German-influenced Monstrasse area, the mission is to embrace local and sustainable farming, and it shows in menu items such as pork belly and scallops with grit cake, sweet pepper relish, plum jam, and chili oil, and Maple Leaf Farms duck with smoked carrot, sweet berries, and carrot and celery root slaw. On the second day, I arrived in Kentucky's capital of Frankfort in time for lunch at the Goodwood Brewing, a casual spot overlooking the Kentucky River in warm weather. Be sure to ask for a table on the riverside balcony. This is the place to go for burgers and brews, but there are other tempting menu items. Appetizers include fried green tomatoes with panko breadcrumbs, goat cheese, and charred scallion aioli, and brisket totchos with beer cheese queso, peppers, onions, and pickled jalapeno. As an option to the burger, try the drunken chicken with bourbon bacon jam, beer cheese, shredded iceberg lettuce, and house pickles. If you're really hungry, entrees range from chicken and waffles to bourbon glazed salmon with asparagus and smoked dirty rice. A hearty lunch will fuel you for an afternoon tasting at Buffalo Trace, a National Historic Landmark and the oldest continuously operating distillery in the state. It opened in 1858. If you're lucky, you'll get Freddie Johnson as your tour and tasting guide. Freddie, the third generation in his family to work at Buffalo Trace, is regarded as something of a local treasure for his charm and impeccable knowledge of bourbon. It doesn't hurt that his philosophy is you only bring out the good stuff for people you enjoy being with. I must be on Freddie's A-list because my tasting featured a triple-distilled Wheatley vodka, bourbon samples from an 8-year-old Buffalo Trace barrel, and a 10-year-old Eagle Rare barrel, same recipe but affected by where they are located in the warehouse, says Freddie, a Colonel E.H. Taylor small batch bourbon cream, and to wrap it up, Freddie's root beer, a combination of real cane sugar, oil of birch, and Madagascar vanilla. You know you have to be a star when you get one of their products named for you. Following an afternoon at Buffalo Trace, I wanted to rest up before tackling my next culinary adventure. Serafini is Frankfurt's most famous fine dining establishment with a combination of warm hospitality, ambiance, the Greek Revival-style Old State Capitol building, built in 1830, is the view from the front window, and stellar Italian food. And I will inject here real quickly when you go to Frankfurt and you find this place, walk around the next couple of blocks that it adjoins. Unbelievable, but a beautiful walking area. For starters, try the grilled brie with fig preserves and move on to a steakhouse wedge salad before choosing from a selection of 8 pastas, and I'm partial to lasagna. If you have room for an entree, I suggest the salmon with shaved Brussels and sweet potato risotto, cilantro, and chili plum with sesame sauce. Serafini also has an extensive bourbon list. Before leaving Frankfurt for the last leg of my trip, I stopped at Bee's Bakery for a flaky croissant and a chat with Beth Carter, the eponymous Bee, who returned to her hometown after stints cooking for Taylor Swift and Ree Drummond, TV's Pioneer Woman. Her bakery has been described by the Food Network as one of the top 10 places in the U.S. having the cutest food. Last stop was the unofficial bourbon capital of the world. With Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, Heaven Hill, and a slew of other distilleries, it's almost impossible not to find bourbon in this town. I have done my fair share of sipping here, but had never seen, or been rather, to Preservation Distillery before this visit, and that was my loss. This family-owned distillery is described on its website as the first and only 100% pot-distilled producer in Nelson County. To this, I would add that it's a beautifully situated hidden gem that you could easily overlook if you aren't vigilant. That would be a shame, because then you would miss an informative tasting with the head distiller, Matthew Jackson. As Preservation has been open only 4 years, none of their spirits has been released yet, but Jackson says that rye will be released this year with bourbon a few years down the road. I had a chance to taste several ryes, and if the bourbons are half as good, Preservation can take its place among bourbon's big boys. You won't go hungry in Bardstown either. For breakfast, head to Fresh, and take my word for it, the blueberry scones are the best you'll find in the Commonwealth, and yes, Fresh is the name again. Not the description of the food, necessarily. The bar at Willett Distillery makes for an excellent lunch stop. Their egg salad sandwich is like no other I've had, and the croquet monsieur gets raves as well. The Rick House, named for the building where the bourbon ages, has a dinner menu featuring dishes such as barbecue bourbon chicken, bourbon blueberry salmon, top of the Rick hot brown, and a selection of steaks, all accompanied by sides such as green beans, scalloped potatoes, and bourbon mushrooms. There's a new restaurant to choose from with the recent opening of the kitchen table at Jim Beam Distillery. Both the bar and restaurant focus on Kentucky-grown produce, meaning there will be plenty of country ham, catfish, and pulled pork on the menu, along with cocktails featuring Beam's best bourbons. If you're a fan of America's only native spirit, come find bourbon. In these cities, it won't be difficult. Wow, what a trip that would be, huh? Well, if you're thinking about taking a road trip, as we've described so far, Lynn O'Rourke Hayes of FamilyTravel.com has some offerings for you. On her article, Iconic American Road Tips, or Trips, I should say, it's an article that was published in the March 20th, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer, and we'll read an excerpt in the time remaining. Rising gas prices may discourage some travelers from packing up the car in the weeks and months ahead, yet the American road trip remains an enduring tradition and in the end can provide an affordable education. Here are some ways to hit the open road. First up, the Colo road trips. The Colorado Tourism Office has made it easy for road trippers to explore the state's 24 scenic and historic byways. The Tourism Office's microsite includes an interactive map that enables travelers to explore options by region, interest, or season. Travelers seeking inspiration can also access insider tips and side trip suggestions with more than 150 Colorado trip itineraries, making multi-day adventures easy to plan. The flexible itineraries offer suggestions for historic attractions and active adventures and highlight cultural opportunities. Visitors to the site can also peruse for picnic, dining, and hiking and lodging suggestions. And they have some online places to get more information. First up is colorado.com/colorados-scenic-historic-byways. Again, that's colorado.com/colorados-scenic-historic-byways. The other is colorado.com/colo-road-trips. That's colorado.com/colo-road-trips. Then we have Skyline Drive in Virginia, a little bit closer to home. Meandering along the crest of the mountains through the woods and past spectacular vistas, Virginia's Skyline Drive begins in Front Royal and twists and turns through southwest Shenandoah National Park. You'll roll along, passing through more than 200,000 acres of protected land that's home to deer, songbirds, black bears, cascading waterfalls, and fields of wildflowers. Hike in the shade of oak trees along the Appalachian Trail. Discover the stories from Shenandoah's past or explore the wilderness at your leisure. Online, it's nps.gov/shen, S-H-E-N. That's nps.gov/shen. Then we have the Beartooth Highway. Visitors who travel this extraordinary byway experience the visual trifecta of Montana, Wyoming, and Yellowstone Park, taking in both the Absacoka and Beartooth Mountains. The windy, cliff-hugging 68-mile stretch introduces road explorers to one of the most diverse ecosystems accessible by auto. Rising to 10,947 feet above sea level, it's also the highest elevation highway in the Northern Rockies. Stunningly beautiful, with the All-American Road showcases wide, high alpine plateaus, painted with patches of ice-blue glacial lakes, forested valleys, waterfalls, and wildlife, and planned for many stops so the driver can take in the long views of the whole crew can hike to a nearby alpine lake. Again, that's BeartoothHighway.com. If you want more information online, BeartoothHighway.com. And my friend, that's where we'll stop today's travel on Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.